Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Columbus is about to turn pink for the annual Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. We'll talk to the director of Komen Columbus about the event. And we'll hear some of Columbus City Council's recent meeting in which the pro-Palestinian demonstrations and arrests of demonstrators will be discussed. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State has a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, it's that time of year again on Saturday, May 18th, the 32nd annual Komen Columbus Race for the Cure, and that cure is for breast cancer. That's happening here in Columbus. You're going to see a lot of pink, and someone who's partially responsible for that is Lindsay Collins. She's the executive director for Komen Columbus, joining us today to tell us more about this big event. Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me.
So to start off, why don't you give us in your words why it's so important for the Race for the Cure to be supported, especially here in Ohio?
Yeah, so the Race for the Cure is a massive event here in Columbus. I would really like to say that it's an iconic event here in Columbus, but why it's so important is because the more money we raise for the Race for the Cure, the more mission that we can provide right here in Columbus, Ohio. Each week in Ohio, over 3,700 people are reaching into Komen, whether they're needing breast cancer services or educational materials, but they are reaching in, and we are here to support those 3,700 individuals each week here in Ohio. That's why it's so important to participate, to donate, to sponsor, and even volunteer your time and talents, because the more people that we have participating and supporting the event, the more people that we can reach right here in Columbus.
It is a big event, and it needs to raise a lot of money as the largest Komen Race for the Cure event in the United States. That's exactly what you set out to do every year. Tell me a little more about what participants, volunteers, even folks who want to come and be spectators can expect on Saturday, May 18th with the event.
Yeah, so Kate, like you said, we are the largest Komen event in the country. We are so incredibly proud of this, and this year marks our 32nd anniversary of the Columbus Race. Right here in our community, folks have raised over $30 million across those 32 years with the Columbus Race. And each year it gets better and better. So this year you can expect a lot of things on race morning. So on Saturday, May 18th, we are at North Bank Park. Registration opens at 6:30. The Expo, our Hope Village, which is a really special place for survivors and thrivers, our VIP tent, which are for top fundraisers and top teams. And we even have some fun food trucks coming down there. All that opens at 7 a.m. We've got an opening ceremony that'll kick off at 8:10 with inspirational stories and messages. And then the 5K actually kicks off at 8:30 with the 1 mile family fun walk to follow. And then really everything that morning wraps up at 11 a.m.
It seems like a quick schedule, but you pack a lot into it. And you couldn't do that without the help, I would imagine, of many volunteers. Lindsay, if you would, tell us a little more about the role volunteers play in making Race for the Cure such a success. And for those listening that say, hey, I've got that day free, I want to come help, let us know how we can get involved in volunteering.
Yeah, so volunteers are truly vital to this event. We've got an amazing planning committee that volunteers their time, their talents, and leading up to race day, they're helping us plan such a memorable experience for every participant that comes downtown. They also help lead event areas on race morning, helping to execute the event. And then we also have some really great event day volunteers. So you can get involved with us, whether you are an individual, maybe you want to get your church, your organization, or even your company involved as a volunteer group. But we are always looking for new volunteers to come out and support the Columbus Race for the Cure pre-event, post-event, and on event day. So if you are interested in getting more involved with us, please email ohvolunteer@komen.org, and our team will be able to reach back out to you with more volunteer opportunities.
What a great email address, ohvolunteer@komen.org. That's kind of impossible to forget. Lindsay Collins is executive director for Komen Columbus on Saturday, May 18th. It's the annual, this time 32nd annual, Komen Columbus Race for the Cure. Downtown Columbus will be a sea of pink. Breast cancer survivors, supporters, and every other person involved will be there cheering on the racers and
Lindsay, I would imagine there is still time if one would like to be involved in the walk or run of the 5K or the 1 mile. There's still time to get involved, right?
Absolutely. So you can still register online at www.komen.org/Columbus Race. That's the easiest way to get registered right now. Or we do have a couple in-person registration options. You can join us on Friday, May 17th at what we call our packet pickup. It is at North Bank Park inside the pavilion from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, that Friday, May 17th date. You can register on site, pick up your race t-shirt and your race bib and be all geared up for race morning. But also we have on race morning, the pavilion opens at 6:30 and you can register on site with us day of as well.
Fabulous. All kinds of options there. And of course, we hear a lot at this time of year about Komen Columbus and about the race, Race for the Cure. The other 364 days of the year, though, I know that your organization, Lindsay, is doing really important work in the community for those with breast cancer. And if someone listening right now maybe just got a diagnosis or has some questions about ways that Komen could perhaps support them or their family, how can they get in touch with your organization?
Absolutely. So they can go to komen.org, and we've got a fantastic helpline of trained individuals that can help from anything from, I just got diagnosed, what are my next steps, to even learning how to get involved here locally in Columbus, to be an advocate, or to learn about our research opportunities that are available as well. So really going to komen.org is probably the best first step in getting in touch with Komen.
Fabulous. Lindsay Collins, thank you so much for your time today. I know that this is, like you said, and we have said, the largest Komen Race for the Cure event in the U.S., and that's pretty remarkable, but not surprising. In a community like Columbus, people show up, and especially for this cause. You're going to see a whole lot of pink on Saturday, May 18th, so don't stop now. Get involved. Get a volunteer position, or maybe even get a race bib and get out there on the 5K course. Again, Lindsay Collins, thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck with the Race for the Cure.
Thank you so much.
My son Ian was diagnosed with a brain tumor at the age of 16 months. The outlook was pretty rough. I mean, it was, you know, we had no hope until St. Jude rescued us. I mean, they saved him. To this date, you know, we are 12 years into this journey, and from day one, we have never once seen a bill. It gave us the peace of mind to know that we're there with our son and we're gonna beat cancer together. Now, he is doing really, really well. He's alive because of what St. Jude has done. He's here because of the doctors who came before, their blood, their sweat, their tears, the knowledge accumulated and shared, you know, with everyone else around the world. This is how we get rid of this, how we help kids beat cancer all over. It's the future.
Together, we will make cures possible for every child everywhere. Learn more at stjude.org.
I'm Shanola Hampton. Every day, millions of people face hunger. Today, I will share with you some of their experiences. I'm stuck between paying for medications or paying for food. John from Maine. After paying my bills, I can buy groceries. It's sad to say, food comes last. Alice from Oregon. I thought pantries were for less fortunate people, but anybody could be less fortunate in a day or even a second. Claire from Virginia. The Feeding America Network of Food Banks helps provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. No one should have to worry where their next meal will come from. Together, we can end hunger. Learn more at feedingamerica.org.
When you take a walk around your neighborhood and notice all the things that make it feel like home, like all the houses lying neatly together in a row, or your neighbor, Miss Rita, who always waves at you when you drive down the street, or that movie theater in the strip mall that might look a little worn down, but has the best popcorn you've ever tasted. One thing might be a little harder to notice, because somewhere tucked in that neat row of houses is hunger. It could be your next door neighbor, or your coworker, or your daughter's friend from school, because over 30 million Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. Hunger lives in neighborhoods all around us, but it doesn't have to. Together, we can provide 1 billion meals by 2030, because everyone should be welcome at the table. Learn more at nourishingneighbors.com. Let's break the cycle of hunger together.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. On college campuses across the U.S. and right here in Ohio, pro-Palestinian demonstrators have clashed with law enforcement as tensions escalate. In Columbus, there have been several arrests on Ohio State's main campus, and some of those who were arrested addressed Columbus City Council on Monday night. Before that, Council President Shannon Hardin invited some Columbus City officials to speak about city policies. Here's some of the proceedings.
We wanted to take a moment. We know that we have visitors back at council, and there have been a lot of discussion around the protest and arrest at the Ohio State University on Thursday night. So I wanted to take this time to be clear as I speak on behalf of my body. This council supports the First Amendment and the right to peaceful protest. We said that for months as advocates filled our chambers. We said it in a resolution that we passed last month, and we said it in a statement that we put out on Friday. Since Friday, I've talked to my friend, Rep. Munira Abdulhali, who was present on Thursday and who was injured. I have been in touch with leaders at the Ohio State University. I've also spoke with our city attorney, Zach Klein, this morning. So I wanted to use the start of this meeting for folks to get answers and more so clarity on what took place and what the city's role has been. So I want to start by asking Public Safety Director Kate Pashadi to explain what took place from the city's perspective, and I will turn it over to her. After the city attorney, Public Safety Director speaks, I'm going to ask Deputy City Attorney Laura Baker Morris to comment. And then we will go out of order. I know that, again, folks have come to seek answers, and we want to make sure that they have that opportunity. And so we will go out of order, and we'll take three speakers who have signed up and work with our office to speak before we move forward with council. So with that, I'll turn it over to the director.
Council President Hardin, council members, the Department of Public Safety and the Division of Police stay in close communication with our partners in situations like this. In this case, the event on the 25th was confined to OSU campus and was being handled by OSU police and the State Highway Patrol. To be clear, the Columbus Division of Police did not make any arrests at OSU on April 25th, and we did not deploy any of our helicopters for this incident. We have learned a lot over the past few years and have made extensive reforms and policy changes relevant to the way we do business. CPD operates under city code and the federal court injunction that are specific to Columbus Police when it comes to any protest response. We carefully weigh every request made for assistance against city code, the court injunction, and the mission of the division. Since 2020, the Columbus Division of Police has completely overhauled its response to civil unrest. That includes changes in division policy and city code, which are in alignment with a federal court injunction laying out the legal parameters of how our division is permitted to engage with protesters. Our public order, public safety team, including the dialogue team, is a result of these reforms, with a focus of improving police engagement with people exercising their First Amendment rights to speech and peaceful assembly. We've seen the success of this approach multiple times over the last year plus. Utilizing dialogue as a primary focus to build relationships with the community we serve, the division has been able to keep order and peace in tense situations that could have easily turned volatile. And they did this while protecting and enabling the peaceful exercise of First Amendment rights on all sides. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you, Director. And now I'll turn it over to the Deputy City Attorney's Office. I know that there have been a lot of questions directed towards the office. Director, or Deputy City Attorney.
Thank you, Council President Hardin, members of Council. Please know that at this time, no decisions have been made regarding these cases. This morning, attorneys for those charged with misdemeanor offenses out of the recent protests on the campus of The Ohio State University requested and were granted a continuance of the arraignment date to June 14th. We anticipate that the same request will be made for the remainder of cases that are set later this week. In the interim, the city attorney's office will be conducting a full review of the facts, including the footage of the events. Once we gather all the facts, decisions will be made on how to proceed with each case. This approach is standard practice to ensure a fair resolution of all criminal matters handled by the city attorney's office. Thank you.
Thank you, City Attorney. And like I said, we had several folks signed up to speak throughout different portions of tonight's agenda, but we thought it would, to respect their coming down and the events of last Thursday, that we would focus the time right now. So we have three speakers that have signed up, Dalal Shatlash, Cheyenne Percy, and Aaron Ellington, who have signed up to speak. And I think Aaron Ellington has signed up to speak first. Welcome to council.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Aaron Ellington. I'm a Christian minister within the city in the Vineyard Movement, Life Vineyard on the Near East Side, 34205. I was arrested Thursday night while addressing a police officer on the sidewalk outside of the protest. I was in the protest in the beginning and separated myself after the line had been broken, peacefully spoke to police, and told them that I pray that they never had to experience the terrors that they brought upon people that day. I witnessed folks of the Muslim faith, faith that I don't even share, pray as police pushed the line, broke the line, and arrested people in the midst of prayer. Though I don't share faith tradition with the Muslim folks, I do see their humanity. I do see that they are also people. And the image of the police, whether Columbus, whether Cleveland, whether state troopers, or whether OSUPD, should be condemned by this council and by any surrounding council. I don't see how you can condone violence against folks who are peacefully praying in a public space. I thank Ms. Williams-Scott because I have seen her in the streets of Columbus. I thank you for your work within the streets of Columbus. And I have not seen any of your faces within the streets of Columbus working alongside of us within the streets. So I hope it's not a condemned. I'm not here to condemn you. I'm here to say I hope to see you working alongside us in the streets as well. All right? Peace and love. Thank you, sir.
Next speaker to come before council is Ms. Dalal. Welcome back to council.
Thanks to the officers on April 25th, I'm having a little trouble reading and writing and remembering things. My processing speed is about half. I have a severe concussion. So please bear with me today. You see, when the officer saw me about four rows back and pointed me out, about four community members stepped in front of me to stop my arrest. That is when they proceeded to pick me up by both my hair and my neck and slam my head into the ground and hold me there before dragging me through the grass of my oval. Not to mention, at one point, three officers picked me up by my ankles and wrists as an officer explained to trainee officers what a three-man hold was. I'm glad somebody learned something on campus that day, because it certainly wasn't the 16 students brutally assaulted emotionally and physically by officers, the same officers that you were unbelievably considering raising the budget for today. When we arrived at the jail, there was three hijabi women amongst us, two of which their hijabs were forcefully removed, one of which her hijab wasn't returned until I made a scene. And all of which were forced to take mugshots without their hijabs.
Shame. Shame.
They had 20 women in a holding cell, which meant there was no place to pray. When I asked for something to pray on, once at 3 o'clock and the second time at 5 o'clock, I was refused and instead berated and called disrespectful for an officer for repeating myself. We were refused both halal and kosher meals, which didn't end up being a problem for us, but was for our Jewish comrade who was ironically celebrating Passover. The first day I came in here in October, I said we had been living in a dystopia, and honestly, I think I disagree with myself today. We haven't been living in a dystopia for the last week or even the last 7 months. Instead, we have been living in a simulation, the Sparks Notes version, if you will, a slight taste of what life is like in Palestine. Which should come as no surprise, honestly, because our cops are trained by the IOF and the Israeli Leadership Academy, regularly visits the Columbus Police Academy. CPD has developed strategies and methodologies that were originally implemented and taught by Israeli right-wing lobby groups, the same groups that are currently perpetuating the massacre of 30,000 people in a little over 200 days. We had 41 people arrested, which is one-third of the average daily killed and injured in Gaza. We had women's hijabs being forcefully removed, which is all too reminiscent of the humiliation tactics of the IOF, who regularly strip Palestinian women they arrest for no other reason than to humiliate. I won't be humiliated. Nor will I allow them to think that they humiliated. I was likewise strip searched by CPD in complete eyeline of male officers. We are having Palestinian students.
Camera! Camera!
Camera!
Why is the camera off?
The camera is on. Please, can you continue?
We are having Palestinian students be brutalized emotionally and physically from Gaza to Columbus. I spent 2 days in the ER missing my thesis dissertation and my final exams, and you know what? Up thing really is.
Well, if you use language, we will turn.
As I couldn't care less. Because I know if you're upset at my language and not at the actions of your police force, that's what's up. No matter how many concussions, no matter how many times CPD tries to intimidate, and no matter what tactics they use to scare and humiliate us, it won't even touch on what the people in Gaza have gone through. You are allowing, and if anything, applauding by even considering this budget change, by the brutalization of your community for the agenda of a genocidal governmental body. You have only messed up since October. The least you can do with your community is work with us to drop the charges. Unfortunately, as students, we haven't learned a lot this school year. We have been a little distracted, but we have learned and witnessed and have mastered in so little time is the teachings and we are now teaching the importance of community and the need to protect one's community. As the world turns their heads to students and student activism, maybe you can take a minute to look in our direction and learn a thing or two as well.
Director, to be clear, was CPD involved in the arrests made on Thursday night?
Council President, CPD was not involved in making any arrests on April 25th.
Thank you. Thank you. The last speaker to come before council is Cheyenne Parsi.
Parsi.
Welcome to council.
Hello, council. I am here as a rehabilitated man. I feel a lot better. I was a bad boy on Thursday evening. At least that's how I felt when the police dealt with me. I felt like Hannibal Lecter. But I want to show the timeline of how I was deeply mistaken. I was a bad boy. But now I'm rehabilitated. So to start off, I'd like to say, I think it's actually a great idea to drop the charges. Because me and all of my comrades that were in jail with me, we are rehabilitated. We feel a lot better. We don't want to go back to jail. In fact, after going to jail, I don't want to see anyone go to jail ever again. There's an agenda item. It's 11/39/2024. I don't care about the minutia. To me, it reads like more money to cops. And I'd like to support that agenda item. Let's give more money. I'd like to talk about my stay in the county jail. But before I could get there, I was zip-tied for 6 hours. Now, immediately when it's put on, you can see me on the video grimace. I was in immediate pain. And I looked at the officers in the face and I said, "You got me. Do you mind loosening the zip tie? I'm not going anywhere." He didn't say anything. Let's go backwards a little bit. It took, I'm 160 pounds. Big dude, don't I look like a big dude? It took 5 officers to put me down. When I went down, I had my hand below my stomach, and I was told, "Stop resisting! Put your hands behind your back!" I can't put my hands behind my back. My hands are under my stomach. So what did the female officer do to help me get my hand underneath my stomach, out behind my back? She pulled my pants down. I know, in the moment I thought, that's a violation. But I'm rehabilitated now. She must have thought I needed a colonoscopy. We were taken on a bus. We were put on the bus. I had a comrade on the bus that was in so much pain from the zip tie. He got up and walked to the steel door separating the animals from the humans, being the police officers, the humans, us the animals, in the back of the bus, and said, "Mr. Officer, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm feeling very queasy from the pain of the zip ties. Would you mind please loosening the zip ties?" They ignored him. He asked again. They ignored him. He asked again. And they said, "We don't have anything to cut the zip ties loose." So he turned back around and started walking back to his seat. Shannon, relax. Relax. Relax and bear with me, brother. He passed out and he smashed his head on the floor. I'm sorry, I take that back. He smashed his head on the wall, the steel wall. I thought that man was dead. I got up and I screamed and I screamed and I screamed for them to open the door. They opened the door that much and said, "That's what you signed up for." I told him, "You guys are deputy sheriffs. Can you not give him some medical aid?" They shut the door in my face. For 15 minutes, I continued to say, "Get him a paramedic." It took him 15 minutes. That man lay unconscious on the floor. We couldn't even check his pulse because I'm zip-tied. They opened the door. They said, "Get up. He's passed out." I know. I'm rehabilitated now. I'm misremembering how it went down. They were nice to, oh, hey, buddy, do you need some water? Why don't we get these zip ties off you? I thought we didn't have anything to get the zip ties off. Can we get the zip ties off? Do we want more bodies on this bus? Shut the door in my face. Then we went inside the Ohio Union. Guess who was there while we were processed? CPD. I know I'm brown, I'm not white, but I was born here. I speak English pretty well. I can read Columbus Police Department. Yeah, they were there. Then they threw me into what I can call, at best, a dog kennel. Me and 9 other men, 4 on my side and 5 on their side, with my hands tied behind my back, with about that much space, in the dark, with no running air in there. It took us about 20 to 30 minutes to get to county jail, and we sat outside a county jail at 2 in the morning till 4 in the morning without being able to breathe. We asked the police officer, can you let us out? We're not going to go anywhere. We'll stand in line. He said, I can't do that. I said, okay, do you mind at least opening the door so we can breathe? We're about to pass out in here. He stopped answering. I wouldn't put my worst enemy. I wouldn't put my worst enemy in that. God be my witness. I wouldn't put my worst enemy in those circumstances. You dare dehumanize us. You are the ones who are dehumanizing yourselves. I am a man with rights. And those rights were given to me by God Almighty. God Almighty. And he will sit in President Hardin's chair, and you will stand there, and I will stand here, and I will bear witness one more time, and God save you on that day.
Just to be clear, and I think that Mr. Parse said this, that was not a city jail, that those would... Director, were folks processed in the city jail today?
Council President, the city doesn't maintain a jail, it's a county.
It's a county jail.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. This is the people's house where folks come to have these type of conversations. This is actually not the body that would determine who gets prosecuted or who doesn't. I expect... We are listening. We have been listening.
How do you feel?
All right, we're going to take a recess so that we can move forward with counsel.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
In honor of all those we've lost to cancer and those still fighting and thriving, like basketball analyst and cancer champion Dick Vitale.
I want to beat cancer. I'm going to beat it. That's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to win this battle.
Defeating cancer will take all of us. Join our team to help fund game-changing research that saves lives. At the V Foundation, V is for victory over cancer. V is for victory over the odds. V is for victory over health disparities, victory over setbacks, victory over the unknown. V is for victory over giving up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Donate to the V Foundation to join our team and help save lives.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind. It cannot touch my heart. And it cannot touch my soul.
100% of donations fund game-changing cancer research. Donate now to the V Foundation at V.org.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Whether President Joe Biden will appear on the November ballot here in Ohio is still officially up in the air, but state leaders on both sides and in both chambers say they are having discussions and negotiations to make sure it happens. Senate President Matt Huffman said the solution may be adding a provision to an existing bill, or it could be its own standalone measure. House leaders say they also want to fix the problem. The issue is that Ohio's deadline to certify a candidate on the ballot is August 7th, but the Democratic National Convention won't officially nominate President Biden until August 19th, almost 2 weeks later. To fix this, the Democratic National Committee can either move up its nominating convention, or the state legislature can create an exception and allow President Biden to be on the ballot. Governor Mike DeWine weighed in on this.
This is very important that both President Biden and President Trump be on the ballot in Ohio. They're going to be on the ballot. We've got some technicalities that are going on, but it's going to get worked out. So no one should really have any concern. They're going to have a choice this November. They're going to be able to pick one of these two as to be our next president.
Republican and Democratic leaders in the House also say discussions are going on about how to possibly fix the situation, and they both want a longer-term legislative solution.
I think it would be important that we fix this going forward, you know, because one time there will be, you know, the Republicans may fall into this situation in the future.
From my perspective, you know, continuing to do this temporarily is just setting us up for this to come up again into the future. So all those discussions are happening, but also legislative is not the only approach either.
Most recently, the General Assembly did make an exception in 2020 when both parties' national nominating conventions were held after the Ohio deadline. We'll keep you posted. It was a busy week at the State House with both the Ohio House and Senate in session. Lawmakers in the Senate passed a bill that eliminates exceptions to certain sex offenses that apply if the victim is the spouse. House Bill 161 now goes to the governor's desk. The offenses outlined are rape, sexual battery, unlawful sexual conduct with a minor, gross sexual imposition, and sexual imposition. The bill also allows a person to testify against their spouse in a prosecution for sex offenses. The bill passed the Senate unanimously.
I am grateful to finally see it come to fruition so that we can close this loophole in Ohio's law, providing protection to all survivors of sexual violence.
Senator, the chair recognizes Senator Antonio.
Currently, Ohio law says the spousal exception for rape applies only if the spouse lives with the offender. This bill will apply regardless of where they live. And in the House, lawmakers passed House Bill 230. It aims to increase penalties for drug and human trafficking. It also creates the offense of participating in an organization for trafficking people and makes that a first-degree felony. However, some lawmakers stressed their concern with a part of the bill that removed the knowledge requirement for possessing a fentanyl-related compound. They argued it could get innocent people in trouble with the law. This bill now heads to the Senate. Nurses across Ohio are calling for change they say will help their own well-being and the well-being of their patients. They rallied at the State House this past week. They support a bill they say would help increase their numbers and relieve their job stress. This, as a nursing shortage affects hospitals, nursing homes, and other facilities in Ohio and across the country. Their message was understaffing equals a patient care crisis. They say there aren't enough nurses, and the stress and overwork are forcing many to leave the profession. The father of one nurse says for his daughter, the stress of the job and depression became too much to bear.
It's difficult. I was the one that found her.
Ron Smith's daughter, Tristan Smith, died by suicide last August at the age of 28. She was an emergency room nurse at a hospital in the Dayton area. He says the stress of her job affected her mental health, and he had tried to talk her into quitting nursing.
I told her, I said, Tristan, if you are crying before you're going to work because you don't know what kind of night you're going to have, if you're physically getting sick before you go into work, we need a different career here.
Now Ron is advocating for change.
I am here today in memory of a cherished life lost.
He shared Tristan's story at this Nurses and Healthcare Professionals rally at the State House. Ohio Nurses Association President Rick Lucas says they support bipartisan House Bill 285. It would mandate minimum nurse-to-patient ratios in hospitals and create a loan-to-grant program to recruit more nurses.
For years, hospitals have been understaffed, leading to overburdened healthcare workers that are leaving the profession, leaving the bedside in droves.
A study in early 2023 by the National Council of State Boards of Nursing found around 100,000 nurses nationwide have left the profession since the COVID-19 pandemic. The bill's co-sponsor, Representative Elgin Rogers, says it is about retaining and recruiting nurses, but also about the patients.
We want to make sure that patients have the staffing ratio so that we can take care, the nurses can take care of our loved ones.
Co-sponsor, Representative Haraz Ghanbari, says the Ohio Hospital Association acknowledged to him the challenges with nurse staffing, but believes hospitals need more flexibility with their own ratios.
What they've shared with me is this is an issue that they've been working on for some years, and my response is, it hasn't gotten us to where we need to be right now.
While his heart aches over the loss of his daughter,
what do we want?
When
do we want it?
Now.
Ron Smith says he'll pour his energy into the cause.
My role right now is to support this bill and get this bill passed.
I reached out to the Ohio Hospital Association. They sent a statement saying the association opposes House Bill 285 and the impact it would have on hospitals' ability to provide care. It says in part, per Ohio law, Ohio hospitals develop nursing service staffing plans by organizing internal committees of caregivers, including nurses, to make recommendations for staffing levels that provide both a safe working environment for employees and quality health care for patients. It goes on to say mandated approaches to nurse staffing limit innovation, reduce the flexibility needed to respond to patients' changing care needs, and increase stress on a healthcare system already facing an escalating workforce shortage. We have the full statement in this story on 10TV.com. The association spokesperson also pointed out that there are more than 24,000 job listings for nurses on the Ohio Means Jobs website. Now, if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, call or text 988, the Suicide and Crisis Hotline. Someone is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to take your call. In an effort to combat big and small pharmacies from going bankrupt across the state, two lawmakers introduced a bill called the Community Pharmacy Protection Act. It's an issue we highlighted earlier this month. We told you how a local pharmacy owner had to close four of his stores, including one in Plain City. He said it's because his profits were being taken away by what are known as pharmacy benefit managers. 10TV's Kevin Landers explains how this bill will combat that.
The lead sponsor of the bill says what's happening to big and small pharmacies is, quote, a health crisis. From January through March, more than 100 pharmacies have closed, according to state records. Sponsors of the Community Pharmacy Protection Act say the bill would prevent further closures by making drug prices more transparent so customers, pharmacies, and employers would know exactly what they're paying for.
If the PBMs would quit being greedy in the middle of this whole transaction and be transparent, if we're transparent, we'll know what they've done.
The bill's sponsors point to pharmacy benefit managers as reasons why drug prices keep going up. Under the bill, PBMs would be forced to be audited so that everyone would know where the money is going. Reporting from the State House, Kevin Landers, 10TV News.
And you can find Kevin's full story on the independent pharmacy crisis in Ohio on 10TV.com/consumer-10. More state help could soon be on the way for the families who lost their homes when tornadoes hit Logan County on March 14th. While recovery work continues on the ground in Indian Lake, work is also happening at the State House. State leaders are working on details of a plan to help those affected. They hope to finalize it soon. State Representative John Cross represents the Indian Lake area. He told me members of the House and Senate and the governor's staff met Wednesday morning as they worked to figure out the best, fastest way to help those affected. Representative Cross says 250 housing units are still needed for those who lost their homes to the tornado. Governor DeWine recently requested the Small Business Administration issue a rapid disaster declaration for Logan County residents, families, and businesses. If granted, the SBA would make low-interest loans available to qualifying businesses and individuals. Cross says once that happens, the state can release money. He says it could be as much as $15 million to help the uninsured and underinsured with their long-term housing needs. He says that could possibly come as direct grants to people in need. One idea that had been floated was to use state funding to buy RVs for those people, but Cross says that would put the state in the position of having to own all the RVs after the fact. Representative Cross says he wants to keep the application process simple so people don't have to fill out a 30-page document. He also says they want to do it quickly to keep those people from moving out of the Indian Lake area permanently. Again, he and others hope to have a plan in place in May.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
I've been driving trucks for a long time. Safety is my number one priority. I know that my truck has huge blind spots. That's why I remember to check my mirrors often for smaller vehicles. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're behind the wheel, try to avoid lingering in those blind spots. It can be dangerous. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Como la luna y el sol.
My name is Luis Fonsi. A lot of people don't know enough about Alzheimer's. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to get help. No one should face Alzheimer's or other dementias alone.
Los girasoles nunca dejan de girar.
Resources are available at alz.org and by calling the Alzheimer's Association's 24/7 free hotline at 800-272-3900.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive. Like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with our hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex, how did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom! I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project.
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations.
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities is a state agency whose name explains exactly what it does. Its mission statement is to empower Ohioans with disabilities through employment, disability determination, and independence. It's been around for more than 50 years. One opportunity the agency didn't want anyone to miss was the recent total solar eclipse. It played a key role in the state getting 29 of these little green boxes to place at 29 of our state parks in the eclipse's path of totality. They're called light sound devices. They allowed those who are blind or visually impaired to hear the eclipse. As the eclipse passed over the light sensor inside the device, the tone changed, allowing them to follow along. The agency is also known for its vocational rehabilitation program. It served 34,000 people in that program last year. It also helped about 150,000 people people figure out whether they medically qualify for federal disability benefits through the Social Security Administration. Joining me now to talk about the agency's mission and services is Kevin Miller, the Director of Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities. Kevin, thanks for being here today.
Doug, great to be here. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. And speaking of that, I was with you out at Alum Creek State Park when those light sound devices were demonstrated before the eclipse. Pretty cool, special way to make sure that everyone was included in that once-in-a-lifetime event.
Absolutely. We really appreciated you being there, and it was just another example of Governor DeWine and Lieutenant Governor Husted's commitment to making sure that all Ohioans live up to their God-given potential. And, you know, what we want to try to be able to do is to make sure everybody understands that no matter where you go and what you do, there's lots of Ohioans with disabilities, majority of them invisible. And how do we make sure that everybody's being thought of when they're doing something?
What role did the agency play in making sure that those devices were available?
Well, I got to give kudos to my good friend, Director Mary Mertz, who gave me a call and said, hey, Kevin, I saw this great article from the Department of Natural Resources. And she said, I saw this article in National Geographic, and this astronomer has a friend who's blind, and they created these devices. Do you think we could get a couple? And I said, well, I don't know. Let's see what we can do. So we called Harvard. And we talked to the professor. We talked about the Accessible Ohio Initiative that we have here, started by Governor DeWine. And they said this is exactly the type of thing that we were hoping would happen. And so they sent us 29 of these devices, and we were off and running. So that's how it came about.
It all came together. Now, that was for the blind or visually impaired. You also have something that's very practical for deaf people in our community.
Yeah.
And what is that?
Well, there's two things. This is a second part of something that we had done for the deaf community. And this is a card that can help them during a traffic stop to help navigate. It's very nervous, as you can imagine, for anybody who's being pulled over by law enforcement. And it's to help them communicate with the law enforcement officer by being able to point to different things, why they're being pulled over. It also has a card for the law enforcement officer to be able to describe you're getting a warning, you're getting a ticket, whatever it may be. And this is kind of the second part of something that was done several years ago that I was helped draft legislation for, something called the Communication Disability Law, which allows individuals to sign up through the Department of Public Safety's BMV that says, I have a disability that could be make it more difficult for me to communicate. It's not for public record. The only people that could see it is law enforcement when they run the plate, to try to help make sure that there isn't any miscommunication, prepares the officer for one of the most dangerous things they do, which is approach the vehicle of any traffic
stop. How would somebody get one of those?
You can go right to our website.
You just print it off.
And you can print it off, and you can have it with you if it's something that you need.
All right. Let's take a step back now and look at the big picture. So what is what is the overall mission of Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities?
Yeah, as you mentioned, we're over 50 years old. The impetus of vocational rehabilitation really starts from the GI Bill. After World War II, men and women coming back, many of them with pretty significant physical disabilities. But as we've evolved, we're now looking at, you know, some 80% of disabilities, 1.6 million Ohioans. Self-describe as having a disability, and they're invisible. And so as we work on the vocational rehabilitation part, which is just a fancy word for saying we help people gain employment, as you gain employment, you gain independence. And that's the most important thing we want to try to push first when it comes to individuals with disabilities. So we work with, we can open up a case for anybody starting at age 14. I'd like to put a plug in. We should continue to talk about with children with disabilities. I have a child. He's now a young man with a disability, which is what got me into this game many moons ago. You can't stop talking about what it is you want to start doing. And so we try to help individuals. Sometimes it's as quick as, you know, a matter of days and weeks. Sometimes it's years to help individuals with disabilities gain employment.
You mentioned 14 years old for that program. But, you know, who do you help? Is there an age range? Is it people from all backgrounds, different disabilities?
Yes. You name it, we will serve. I think the most important thing is that it's a we proposition. We're here to help individuals from a variety of ranges, whether it's a physical disability, whether it's a developmental disability, whether it's deafness, blindness, whatever it may be. how do we help them navigate to be able to gain employment? I think one of the things you could probably maybe only put on a post-it note that was positive out of the pandemic is that we saw many employers who were so desperate for employees where maybe they weren't thinking about this type of population. Mm-hmm. We saw a surge in being able to place individuals with disabilities in jobs. So this has continued the momentum of making sure people understand there are neighbors, there are loved ones, and they're looking to work.
Now, just the process of applying for disability benefits can be quite mm-hmm. onerous, tedious, and mm-hmm. lengthy. Yeah. And your agency helps a lot of people, I think it was 150,000 just last year, mm-hmm. kind of navigate that system?
Yeah, you know, I think there's so much misinformation out there about the Social Security Administration, what's being done here in Ohio. So one of our divisions, the Division of Disability Determination, our part of that process is that you apply federally through your local federal office. We receive it and we what is called adjudicate the claim. This is where we determine if you're actually meet the criteria that's set by the Social Security Administration and are able to receive benefits. No, you don't have to apply three times and get denied before you get it. The allowance rate is about 38% from your initial claim. You can appeal, and I think this is where if you've seen news about this where there's backlogs and things, many states are not like Ohio where we do a very good job of making decisions within 100 days or so, and that's being appealed, and then it gets into the federal system, and that's where you see 2-3 years worth of backlog.
Now, you also have a relatively new initiative called Accessible Ohio. Yeah. What's that about?
Very excited about this. This is something that, you know, I spoke to Governor DeWine about, and it was the easiest sell ever after I talked to him. He's like, well, why wouldn't we do something like that? This is something that is based through a concept called universal design. You saw a little bit about that with out at Allen Creek with the eclipse. How do we make sure that we're also, as someone who's going to work, that's great, so that we know that we're doing that, but they also want to go to a ball game. They want to go to see the Blue Jackets and want to go to an Ohio State game. How do we make sure we work with those entities to say, how could somebody who's blind or deaf or have a physical disability be able to navigate through that seamlessly? And that's what it means through universal design. You know, we've worked with the airport to train TSA agents on disability etiquette. That's part of an Accessible Ohio initiative. We've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. These are consultations where we come in. It's from a partnership standpoint. We're not the ADA police. We're not here to tell you what you're doing wrong. We're here to say, how can we help you do things in a way that makes it more broad, that the employees are thinking that way? And then they have good ideas on how to say, well, we're hiring individuals with disabilities, or we know there are people here with disabilities who come in. How can we think about them and make their experience better?
It's a great program.
Yeah.
Making everybody feel more inclusive or included as well. Kevin Miller, thank you so much. If you'd like more information about what Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities does, you can check out their website. They are part of the state government. They're an official agency. Check them out if you need more information about any of these services that Kevin talked about today. Thanks again.
Thank you.
One local teacher is White House bound after he was named Ohio Teacher of the Year. Because of that honor, he's attending an official state dinner at the White House in May and bringing along two high school students. The students will get to learn from the White House Media Corps and be in the White House briefing room during the dinner. Teacher Mark Lowry says it is a special opportunity. 10TV's Yolanda Harris has the story.
You know, we might as well take the extra day and get it done the right way.
That right way mentality is part of the reason why
I'm a pretty strict teacher in a lot of ways.
Mark Lowry was named Ohio's Teacher of the Year.
How much of this do you have covered so far?
The Gehanna Lincoln teacher has led the school's broadcast journalism program for 5 years, a passion that began long before he started teaching.
A lot of the skills that I use today and that I teach the kids and, you know, the connections I still have, a lot of them do trace back to my time at Channel 10. Please go put your name on the board.
Lowry was a 10TV sports producer in the 90s, and he says that passion for journalism influenced how he teaches students today.
Kids have to know that you're passionate about what you do and that every day matters, and my expectations never waver.
The students say that's what makes Mr. Lowry different.
In most classes in high school, I feel like the reaction is, I would love to do, like, you know, less work for this class, but Mr. Lowry he always pushes us to think about what we can do more.
See if there's a deficiency.
Senior Natalie Fogel is one of the two students who will be headed to the White House with him.
Dip my toes in the real world before I even go to college. And then also just, it's something I'm never going to forget and something I'll always remember, and I'm very excited.
And I made the option available.
Lowry says the work and the dedication of his students are the reason why he was named Teacher of the Year.
Kids have never backed down from the challenges I give them. They embrace them and they work hard.
Lowry says he has requested appointments with Senators Sherrod Brown and J.D. Vance for when he is in Washington. He says he's going to advocate on behalf of all teachers in Ohio.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday morning at 7 on WBNS FM Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.